have any objection on using quotations from any publication of my?
No, I don't have any
objection.
I'd like to read them,
after all. Well, what I'd be particularly interested in is what is the procedure for putting your boats up in the fall and outfitting them in the spring. In other words, you sit down near Euler Town.
That's right.
Now, did you put your boat up along with berm bank near Euler Town?
In the fall of the year, boating season is over, the boats would be tied up. We had a small, like, wharf place where it was tied up. And the bedding and the necessary equipment, such as the feed basket, the mules, and the curry comb and brush, and collars and things, would be taken off the boat and put in the stable where they were kept. And the facilities and cabin, the bed ticks, the blankets, the dishes and utensils, they can take them off the boat and usually store it away someplace. Probably some of the things that would be used in the home.
Yeah.
Certain pans or kettles or coal pails or water pails or whatever you might have. And the boat would be practically stripped and tied up along the front bank, along the little wharf right in front of our home.
Incidentally, the pilot facilities on the boat, did you have bedroom pottery or just pails?
Yes, it was pails.
Now, if your mother was along, would you have the bedroom pottery then?
Yes, of course, use those.
Yeah.
I imagine that's what the females aboard, that's what they did.
Yeah, but otherwise you just had pails.
In other words, yes, that's right.
That's something people never record. I think it's interesting to know how.
Yeah.
Of course, I imagine also you use the bushes along the footpath a lot.
That's right, that's right. When, probably around some, if you're around some facilities where you tied up at night, there would be outhouses.
Yeah.
Of course, you use those. And like Sunday, where there's a gang of men tied up, you got a gang of boats laying over Sunday, why, usually facilities are such a place.
Yeah.
And of course, there'd be the air of the
outhouses.
And back to the boat again. The boat, as I said, would be tied up for the winter. And after a few weeks, the bank boss took them down along the line wherever there was usually traveled to Topaz with his horse and wagon. And he called along, water's going to be drawn such and such a date. Get your boats out.
Were there quite a few boats?
Of course, he passed the word.
Yeah.
He'd go off through his section, and the next bank boss that intervened with his, why, naturally, he would do likewise.
Get your boats out.
Get your boats out. And then get them out in the middle of the canal, and that call for, that was always the boy's job to do that. Pop would naturally oversee it. We take the old tow line, and we shove the boat over to the tow path side, and there wouldn't be a bush or a twig or anything strong enough over there to tie a tow line through. We'd have to drive a stake. And then we'd run a tow line from the bow and one from the stern, just about so much distance so the boat would lay in the middle of the canal.
And so it would lay flat.
Yeah. We'd have to use a walking plank to get back up on the boat again. Then we'd use pull that plank there until put it down on the berm side to get back off while we had the boat all anchored in the center of the canal. Then as the water went out, naturally the boat set right down level right in the center.
Mm-hmm.
Then as a rule, we took the lines off, all except the ones on the berm bank. And of course, the winter time, that was always...
It never was entirely dry.
There was always water. Always enough water left in there to make good skating. We always had wonderful skating in the canal.
Mm-hmm. And it also kept your boat from drying out.
There wasn't enough water, though, to float the boat.
Yeah.
Because what creeks emptied into the canal, the wastegates were left adjourned, so the water would drift on out to where there were levels that had waste squares in them, that the water would go out.
Mm-hmm.
And if there weren't any, why, the feeders would be left open, and the water would come through the canal, would pass on through the feeder down to the next level and out the waste square. That would be the procedure there. Well, of course, that's the way your boat would lay all winter. unless you had, my granddad, he had, there was a little wide water up above our place, about a quarter of a mile. I remember one winter he put his boat up there. It was just about enough water to float her into the shallow water. And when the water went out of the canal then, it sort of left her lay high and dry up there, and he did a lot of his own work around his boat. I remember that winter he tarred the whole side of his boat with hot tar.
Mm-hmm.
And all around the bow and around the stern and the sides from the water line down.
Were these boats that you owned, or were they company
they were,
boats?
No, they were his own boats. You wouldn't dare do nothing to them that were company boats.
If you ran a company boat and you lived down there, could you leave the company boat there?
Same thing applied.
Uh-huh.
Same thing applied.
But for any maintenance, they had to be
They had to do any work on them in the spring of the year when you went up. The White Fort, why, Nasley, if you wanted to keep that particular boat, well, you'd have to wait till they'd done the work. Otherwise, you switch to another boat and leave that one there until the work was done. If it was anything major, well, I wouldn't pay you to lay around and wait for it. They would naturally take a turn in because of that was quite a busy spot up around Whiteport at that time.
That was where all the company boats
all
were maintained.
All the company boats were built.
And built.
Built there and maintained, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And I see some of our people who have written about the canal and about the boat. They refer to the boat as barges and barge yards and barge winds.
I know that old
and,
story.
I tried to get people straightened out on that. A matter of fact, I've written a piece of notice that I intend to pass on to anybody that would like to use it. It's perfectly welcome to do so. Boatmen were men that operated canal boats were boatmen, not bargemen.
Yeah.
And the boats that operated on the Leine Delaware Canal were never referred to as barges. They were canal boats. And where they were built and maintained repairs and so on and so forth, they were boatyards.
Boatyards.
Definitely. And that's one thing I have read some of the writers who have written about the canal have, I think, misinterpreted and has taken quite a thing away from the canal itself.
Now, after you completed the season's work, what, in general, was the maintenance that was necessary on a boat?
Well, after they were tied up for the winter, you close up the cabin, naturally, so and close the stern windows and the hatches all down good so snow wouldn't get down. The feet just lit, put down, and the pin put in the hat so the wind wouldn't blow it open, and everything secured.
And then just let it go
just
for
leave it lay there till
spring.
Till springtime. And, of course, then early in the spring when sometimes the canal was anywhere near ready to be opened up, why the, again, bank boss would come down the top that and say, water's coming in next week. You'll be here on the 6th or the 8th or 10th or whatever the date has been. And, of course, everybody, it was quite a day when you seen the water coming. Everybody would be out looking, oh, here comes the water, here comes the water. And, well, it was set up about half full. It would be that way maybe for a day and a half. Then it would start to fill up. And naturally, its lines would slack off and you'd pull the boats over and tie them up properly. And then, of course, you would start to get things in shape for the spring. Usually it was new bed ticks went aboard. New bed ticks were usually, they were narrow ticks. They had to be made to fit the bunks, so when the bunks were put up and buttoned up, they were out of the way. I remember quite well, we always kept a certain amount of rice straw. It had to be flailed out instead of running through the thrash machine.
Oh, so it was long.
Keep it long, keep it being all tangled up.
Mm-hmm.
And the bed ticks would be filled with this new, bright, clean straw, and they'd be sewed up, carried down, put on the boat, and the other lines and things would be put back on the boat. The boat pump and the necessary things, the cooking utensils and so on. In fact, well, of course, the water problem, we'd had no cooking water. We'd have to, that water would fail.
Fill up the barrel.
No, it wouldn't fill the barrel.
Oh.
Because water would not keep in those barrels, only piloted over river. Those barrels are filled and filled only. Down when the change of tide between probably Beverly and Riverton.
Why was that?
Well, that's been a question that I've raised many times, and I've spoke to different chemists about it. And my brother-in-law is a chemist, has been for years, actually he's retired now from the Pennsylvania Salt. And I talked to other chemists. Why spring water, well water, city water of any description would only last 3 or 4 days in those barrels and would get all spoiled. You couldn't use it. You'd get sour.
You'd
have to dump it out. The barrels were usually a whiskey barrel, charred, oak barrel.
Yeah. Yeah.
And different water had been tried in them from different places. It would not keep. So how it happened, I don't know how it ever happened, but somebody, somewhere along the line, filled a water barrel going down the river one time, when they're going in the way on the way down to Philadelphia. And they found out that the longer the water was in that barrel, the better it got. You can lay up in Mount Chump for 6 weeks with a barrel of that water. And it was just as, well, matter of fact, was better than what was put in. Now, that's, that was one peculiarity, and the only question or any answer anyone's ever been able to give me to my question was that there's some chemical reaction. Now, whatever that chemical reaction might have been, I don't know. I've just talked to different people, and I've often wondered myself. You fill that barrel with good water out of our wells and homes, 2 or 3 days in hot weather, you'd have to throw it out. You couldn't use it.
That's mentioning the river. What was the range of tide at Bristol? Do you recall?
Yes, I'd say it was about 8 feet.
8 feet. Huh?
Yes, mm-hmm. I'd say possibly 8 feet, unless it would be storm or something, and you might get a little higher tide. They always claimed, I heard these old timers say, well, we're going to get a northeaster tonight. Now we'll get a little more tide tonight.
Yeah.
Whether that's what that meant, I really don't know, but I think it had its meaning. But a northeast storm, the wind had something to do with driving the tide probably.
Well, piles the water against the coast.
Right.
More than the tide normally would.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that was a story on that. And then, of course,
did you do any painting on your boat?
Probably you'd paint the cabin in the spring before you moved your
inside
equipment in, just paint the cabin on the inside. Probably put the new oilcloth on the the cabin steps, and maybe on the cabin floor. And of course, maybe mother or somebody say, well, look, you ought to have curtains at your stern windows. Some of them have little curtains hanging at the stern windows. And of course, the mother or some of the wives of boatmen would usually go down and give it the final touch, you know, before a day or so before you pulled out with the boat. And of course, that was a big day when you start out with the boat the spring of the year. You'll start out everything fresh and clean and nice.
Did most of the boats that were down in that area start out at about the same time?
Pretty much. Probably land 3 or 4 weeks. You see the different ones. Well, when are you going to be ready to go, Bill or Jack or Irv or Harry or John or whoever you might be? Well, we've got this to do. We're going to do that yet before we left. Probably next week we'll get started.
In other words, they had a certain amount of farm work and so on to do on land.
Well, maybe some fence to build or do some odd jobs that they can get done over the winter.
Yeah.
And, of course, naturally, the poles would be painted over new, the boat poles, and the door handles. That is when you had your own boat, and even with the company boat, too, you owned the rigging, but you didn't do no painting on the boat. They didn't submit any other painting on the boat. They were just plain old redskin.
How often were the boats painted?
Well, usually the men, like my grandfather and like the Smith brothers and the men who lived down in our area there, that was William Gray, Ed Smith, Will Smith, and Billy Wells, and John Emery, that was my granddad, Dave Gray, my other grandfather, and another man lived down below Judstown there a little ways. I think his name was Davis. Those men all own their own boats, and they probably touch up around the whaling, paint, maybe go over the white, or if they're whaling, usually the whaling planks are green or blue, as a general rule. So the company boats, they were all colors, just that barn red.
Yeah.
And they usually touch the boats up, pretty some of them wouldn't. Maybe in the middle of summer, around the bow, they touch on people looking fresh.
Mm-hmm.
And naturally, they paint their dashers up and the dashboards and clean up the night hawker and the coal box probably be painted. The water barrel would be painted. The hooks be painted black. The water painted. The wood part be painted white or blue or green, probably to coincide with the color scheme of the boat.
Wow.
And that's about the extent of the getting ready in the spring of the year. You start up the canal, naturally, you get up the whale lock, they weigh you, get your light weight, whatever your light weight was then, that constituted your tonnage then when you went up and loaded, you come down, the light weight would be deducted, and that gives you a percentage of
the weight. Speaking of the whale lock at Moss-Chunk,
Yes.
Yeah. When you were on the canal, the old whale lock at Easton wasn't in...
No, that was out of commission then.
I guess that went out of commission when the coal company took over.
I think so. Well, Lehigh Coal Navigation Company, they did away with that.
Wouldn't collect tolls then.
Yeah,
and,
yeah.
And having the one
see,
up at
the Mars Canal used to come across here when this pig iron, Lucy Furnace up here above Easton was in operation. They used to come over here with to get pig iron, I imagine.
Yeah.
They brought them across the river. Now, our boats would not go over those plains over there. They wouldn't fit. And they couldn't get our boats through the canal because they didn't carry the water. It was a weak part.
Mm-hmm.
They only had 4 feet of water over there, 4.5 feet, I guess. And besides those boats, many of them, I talked to everyone, they had to on hinge to get around some of the... Had to on hinge to one side.
One side, yes. Yeah. I've heard that.
Yes. And of course, they had no lock. They were all flamed over there. They took them all on a car. A car would go down in the water, and the boat plates on. And actually, the water power operated the furnace of power from one level to the other.
Yeah, it was an interesting arrangement. Now, after you fitted out then in the spring, your first job was to go up to Moss-Chunk and load them.
I know if you had a company boat, then you stopped at the yard, doing minor repairs, maybe. And if not, you went right on up, got weighed, and you was up ready for a load. Especially, like any of these men who had regular places, the boat called too, such as I said before. Like, for instance, Granddad, he boated to A.T. Perkins in Beverly. And then the Smith boys, they ran coal into Bristol to this Leadham. And then there was another, Billy Wells and Billy Smith, they boated coal over to Molliner's or Melliner's, I believe it was, in Burlington. So I used to run them over first before you start down the river with a big tow if they had any to go over.
Oh, I see.
One time we had a load of lump coal for Florence up the iron foundry. They had to run us up there first before they didn't like that much. That was a little out of the way, but they had to do it. They had to run us up there first. And of course, when we were on low, we had to wait till they went and got it.
Mm-hmm.
We couldn't have no way to get down.
Mm-hmm.
Somebody one time, attempted to pull a boat across the river with a water pail. I don't know how it made out. I think they got in trouble and had to get somebody come along with a little motorboat to come in. They were going to be tow, I believe, and they were going to have a long walk
on
the pail and going to run along the deck, you know. And they did pretty good till some wind come up. And the kind of thing got out of hand, and luckily our motorboat come along, put a line on them, and see, those sailboats wasn't too heavy, was
it? Yeah. Now, supposing you had a load going to Philadelphia, and you got down to Bristol, would you lay in the basin there until there were enough boats to make up the tow?
Tow ran on schedule. The tow ran on schedule.
Uh-huh.
Whatever was there when the tow come up went. He wouldn't wait for nobody. We had to wait till he comes.
Oh, I see.
No matter, not like if the tow come up on a, like he come up tonight. come up on the heat. They generally come up on the tide and then down on the tide. And they ran on, they had their own schedule, and we only could go when they said so. Now, when the tow was coming up, they told the tow keeper there at the outlet lock, he'd come up and say, "Fellas, the tow is going to be up tonight, such and such a time." They knew what time the high water and what time you want the boats out. So he'd start to get the boats out of the lock, lock them out into the slip, and get them out on the outside there, already made up for when the tow come up.
That is out in the river.
Yeah, out in the river. And then they had to be not in the way, because whatever he had coming up had to be cleared for them to get in that slip, to get into the outlet lock and into the basin, see.
Mm-hmm.
And that was all done by hand. That was all hand-powered.
With poles.
Yeah, poles and hand-powered. Well, that slip wasn't too wide. You usually get four or five guys out there on the side of the bank and a line.
Pull the line out.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
And the guys were four men. You never took no mules down there. It was all hand-operated. Boats, the loaded boats out and the light boats in.
So they would they would release the light boats, and the light boats would be brought into the basin.
That's right.
And then they would pick up the ones
pick
that...
Pick up the tow. Well, they probably mess around there for an hour or so before they get underway. And old Jim eats them down, walk over to see who all was. Everybody knew everybody, you know. "Well, where are you going, Jack? Where do you go?" "Well, these first five, they go down to Glass House or down to Lead Island, or they go down to Cramp Shipyard." Well, he'd have a little notebook there. "And where's the second bunch go?" "Well, they most of them go to Scoop, a couple go to Camden, Cooper's Creek, and so on around, whatever the, maybe you'd have one for Gloucester, and maybe you'd have four or five down there that maybe unload some pier where there's a certain ship in to be unloaded. Maybe somebody there with some cement on."
Mm-hmm.
I know one case we hauled some pig iron from Catastrophway. We unloaded it into a ship. So they unloaded it with their own hoisting equipment. And naturally the tug then landed us right alongside of the ship. And they took a line for us, and when they was ready, they unloaded this pig iron.
Mm-hmm.
See, the pig iron didn't take up much room down the boat. You could walk all around the lading down there. They put it in stacks. These pig irons was about, I guess it was about 36 inches long, and probably they was rough, very, very rough. You know, men all used hand leathers to handle them. And they would weigh probably close to 100 pounds or better. And they're like long sticks. And then, of course, they'd be stacked.
Like cordwood.
Like cordwood.
Yeah.
And,
but the 100 tons didn't take up much room.
No, it didn't take up very much room at all. "Come on, Ed. We're not doing anything now."
The preceding bell chimes was made November 21st, 1968, at Grant Emery's home, using four of his cast iron mule bells. That's the end.